The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites. The Six Nations Show on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
It's spinning!
Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish.
Got on it!
I've never seen a team like Ireland before.
This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio. The Six Nations Show.
Yes, good afternoon to you all, and you're very welcome along to episode 3 of the Six Nations Show here on OTB Sports with myself, Neil Tracy. It is Italy week, with Ireland looking to get their campaign up and running, albeit a little bit later than we had expected. And we are going to get straight into it today because Andy Farrell named his team at 11 o'clock this morning. He's not taking any chances, as we expected. This game, as far as he's concerned, is about winning, not experimenting with his side. So we've 7 changes from the team that started against France a couple of weeks back, notably Johnny Sexton comes back in. He was injured for round 2. Conor Murray hasn't been past fit, so Jameson Gibson-Park stays in what's an all-Leinster backline. Jordan Larmour also comes in for Keith Earls. Dave Kilcoyne starts at loosehead for just the 9th time, his 9th start and 41st cap. But it's an all-new front row. Himself, Ronan Kelleher and Tadhg Furlong. Furlong making his first start since his injury comeback as well. And James Ryan is also back off the injury table. He is in the first 15, as is Will Connors, who comes in for Josh van der Fleer. So in full, we can look at the team now. We have Hugo Keenan at fullback on the wings. You have Jordan Larmour and James Lowe. Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw in the centre, as expected and as usual. And then an out-half partnership, Leinster out-half partnership of Jameson Gibson-Park and Johnny Sexton, who captains the team. An all-new front row, as I said, Dave Kilcoyne, Ronan Kelleher and Tadhg Furlong. Ian Henderson and James Ryan in the second row. And then it is Tadhg Byrne at blindside flanker, Will Connors at openside, and CJ Stander continuing at number 8. While on the bench, there are 2 potential debuts. Craig Casey is in the matchday 23 for the 2nd time in a row. Hopefully we'll get to see some minutes out of him this weekend to make his debut, as is Ryan Baird, in an Ireland matchday squad for the first time also. And joining them on the bench, Rob Herring, Cian Healy, Andrew Porter, Jack Conan, Billy Burns, who gets the nod over Ross Byrne, and then Keith Earls. So get your comments into us across our live streams at the moment. We'll try to put as many as we can to our panel before we finish up this show. And our panel today, joining me, our former Ireland international Mike McCarthy and former Italy out-half Ian McKinley. Afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, lads. Thanks for having me.
How are you keeping, lads?
So we'll get straight into it, guys. The team news came out around about 11. Plenty of changes from the France game. But as we were kind of expecting, Johnny Sexton back in, James Ryan is back in. Mike, this isn't a team that Andy Farrell is taking any chances with?
Yeah, exactly. Certainly not experimenting. And, you know, all the talk was, you know, they'd love to see some of those younger guys. The Coombs is Tom O'Toole, Craig Casey getting their chances. Perhaps someone else having a go at fly half. But, you know, it looks a really strong team, really strong, and the bench looks really strong. A few changes. Great to see David Kilcoyne, you know, back from injury and getting a start, because he brings a real physicality and X factor. And that front row looks so explosive with Ronan Keller and Tadhg Furlong starting his first game at test level for a year. So great to see him back. James Ryan back, bringing that experience in the second row is fantastic. And I think in the back row, I really feel for Reece Ruddock. For me, he is a man you have to have in the team. And all his form at Leinster, and I actually thought he was brilliant against France. I thought he was one of the real positives in terms of the physicality and aggression he brings. But, you know, he does a lot of the unseen work. And against France, you know, his line-out was fantastic, and his work in getting pods up in defence and stealing French ball, I thought he was a real plus. So I really feel for him, and I just don't know how you can't have Reece Ruddock in the team. And then great to see Johnny Sexton back in terms of experience, because I think against France, with Connor and Johnny Sexton both missing, I think that was the first time those two players actually hadn't been involved for Ireland in 10 years together. So, you know, he'll bring a real aura back and leadership, and that'll bring a real confidence to the rest of the squad. So all in all, you know, a really good team.
Ian, we'll get into the specifics in a couple of minutes' time, but just overall, your thoughts on seeing that first 15?
Yeah, picking up on Mike's point, I think Reece Ruddock can feel really hard done by. I think from an Irish coaching standpoint, how could you leave out Ty Byrne? So I think it was just a case of where could we put him? And, you know, Henderson has performed since he came off the bench against Wales, has performed really well. How can you leave James Ryan out? If the Irish coaches have been talking about a lack of communication, he, I think, is one of the guys that brings that along with someone like Johnny Sexton, obviously, through all his experience. So, delighted to see Ronan Kelleher there. I think he definitely deserves a chance. Tyke Furlong back starting. Even Jordan Larmour getting a start as well. Like, I mean, that's good. So I think it's, you know, a few people might be wondering maybe Billy Byrne's still on the bench there. But I think that's the vote of confidence now that Andy Farrell, sort of 2 weeks in a row in some way, is going with him. Which I suppose for him is a vote of confidence. So strong bench. The two guys on Casey and Baird there. Hopefully they get some game time under their belt.
Yeah, it's interesting you both mentioned Reece Ruddock, because obviously Backer now is an area where they're just pretty much stacked with talent on top of, you know, Will Connors, Tyke Byrne, CJ Tyke Byrne second row or back row as well, and CJ Stander. You know, Josh van der Fleer is dropping out of the team. You've Jack Conan on the bench as well. Reece Ruddock, as you mentioned, who seems to play brilliantly pretty much every time he puts on a green shirt for Ireland, but somehow isn't able to nail down his place in the first 15 or even in a match day 23. And then even someone as far down the line as like Gavin Coombs, as you mentioned as well, Mike, and even someone last week who you were probably looking at, Scott Penny, who hasn't even made his breakthrough into the Ireland even training squads yet.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, leading into this game, the talk about bringing some young, inexperienced guys in to give them that experience. You look at James Ryan, he got capped before he played for Leinster. So, you know, there's a talk about, you know, can we give some of these young guys, before the Leinster played the Dragons at the weekend just gone, all the talk was about, you know, giving Harry Byrne that chance, giving him that opportunity. But, you know, for me, this is why I'm not paid the big bucks of coaching. But, you know, for me, there's three or four guys who I can't understand how they're not in the team. I've touched on Reece Ruddock. The other one would be Bundy Aki. I think Mike Capp mentioned it in the week about, you know, perhaps they're going into some of the games where they're not creating the energy and the noise and the communication, which Ian just touched on as well. But we all know what Bundy brings in terms of X factor when he carries his physicality and defence. And, you know, in terms of getting I'm not sure where you start, 12 or 13, but, you know, in terms of the energy, the noise, the directness he brings, getting over the game line on first phase from set piece, giving the team that momentum to play off. I'm not sure how he's not involved. And then I suppose it's testament to the depth that this Irish squad has built up and got on the bench. Looks incredible. Another one for me is who's not even in the squad is Alton Delan. He's been phenomenal. You know, whether you bring him off the bench, that X factor he brings. I commented on the Racing 92 game for Connacht a few weeks back, and he was an absolute man possessed, an absolute beast. So, yeah, some tough calls. But as I said, that's testament to the depth we've got in the squad.
Mike, is Bundy Aki unfortunate, really, just that Robbie Henshaw has probably hit some of the best form probably of the last 3 or 4 years of his career over the last couple of months?
Yeah, definitely. Robbie's been great. You know, that line break he made against Wales, you know, he's doing it in attack and defence. But yeah, you know, I'm not sure it's the right decision, but, you know, they probably looked at having Bundy at 12 and Robbie at 13. I'm not sure, but... yeah, it's all testament to the depth, and yeah, Robbie's been fantastic, and I think we'll see a big performance over in Italy. I've been on my weather app and I've checked it. It's it's bright sunshine, so it's looking good, and you know, it's just about, I think against France, I think we've been lacking that bit of X factor. I think we've two tries from two games, we've had the least number of offloads in the Six Nations, and against France we kicked 41 times, and you know, I don't think we probably saw much return from those kicks in terms of kind of creating opportunities. So, you know, all the talk's been about playing an expansive game to space, offloading game. And, you know, we're still trying to transition from that Joe Schmidt game plan, which was very effective and worked very well about, you know, keeping hold of the ball, you know, building up high number of phases. And, you know, when you do that, teams start to give away penalties or doglegs start to appear. But I suppose it's trying to adapt to this new game plan, and you know, we would have hoped we would see a bit more return on it over the first two games, and we haven't. But you know, I'm sure we will going into this game against Italy.
Ian, a lot of people over the last couple of weeks have been, you know, calling for experimentation, calling for Craig Casey and Harry Byrne to both be starting, for Ryan Baird to come in as well, Tom O'Toole, for quite a few one-cap players, and even guys outside the squad like Gavin Coombs that we would have spoken about. With your Italy hat on, obviously Andy Farrell has now gone for an experienced side. You know, he's paying a lot of respect to Italy with the team he's picked. From your Italian perspective, if you were still in that camp now and you would have heard people on this side of the water talking constantly for the last couple of weeks about how, oh, we need to use this Italy game to completely change the starting team and throw out the younger guys, would the players have felt a little bit disrespected by that? Would it have put their backs up a bit?
Yeah, of course it does. But you know, Andy Farrell is obviously under a huge amount of pressure, so he's got to get a win. I mean, imagine the pressure if, you know, Ireland scrape a victory by a couple of points or in fact lose the game. So, you know, he's set his stalls out here by picking a team he believes is going to win. I think, you know, the argument of throwing in a few guys, I mean, it can work, but it also can have a detrimental effect on players if you're not fully ready. I mean, if we're talking about, I know there's been a lot of discussion of Craig Casey, Harry Byrne, and they're, you know, very talented players, but have they been starting consistently for their provinces? I mean, is it a correct thing to do to suddenly, you know, throw someone in? For some players it works, for others it might not. You know, if you're playing in those pivotal roles, international rugby is just something, is much more different to European games, to Pro 14, to anything like that. You really have to be ready. And if as a coaching guideline, I suppose, if the player isn't ready, or you don't fully believe that the player is ready, you know, that could have a bad effect for them. So I think that's, you know, Johnny, I think whenever the larger squad was announced, I think you could have generally picked what the back line was going to be. And Johnny obviously is still there just to guide the ship and still bring to the table what he brings, which is an amazing understanding of the game and decision-making. And hopefully that'll, you know, those guys, Casey, you know, if he gets a few minutes playing with him, can understand what the feel of international rugby will be like.
Mm-hmm. Mike, I'm going to play a little video here. As you mentioned, the amount of kicking Ireland did against France and how few offloads were thrown in there as well, and the general attacking style, which is probably something we'll get on to now, because Andy Dunn was on with Joe for Monday Night Rugby this week, and he says he isn't expecting Ireland to go gung-ho overnight with their attacking style, but at the very least in this game against Italy, he says he wants to see signs that they're willing to take more of a chance.
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, yeah. I mean, it would be great. And let's try and quantify what we're looking for. I'm talking about seeing this once or twice in 18 minutes.
Okay.
Done well.
Okay.
I'm talking about reducing our possession to that disastrous, ghastly stat that you read out at the start. 1 in 54 possessions results in an offload. That's horrific. It's an absolutely horrific stat. And what I'm talking about is an improvement on that, which is, I don't think is asking for too much. And I don't think it's suggesting we become the Harlem Globetrotters. And I don't think it suggests we lose attention to detail. I think it suggests we show a bit of courage, and I think it suggests we show some imagination. And yes, I would be deeply worried if you don't see some of it against a inferior Italian side.
Ian, you would have worked with Mike Cass, the Ireland backs coach at the moment, during your time with Italy. What sort of a coach is he like in terms of his attacking philosophy?
Yeah, absolutely. He's very player driven. I mean, he, you know, anytime you've got an idea, you go to him and he'll either run with it, or you discuss it, he'll either run with it or not. So he's very open in terms of the way he wants players to think about the game. He definitely thinks outside. He definitely does think outside the box. And I think, you know, obviously there was a tactic in the France game, you know, just kick the ball, put them under pressure. They were looking to isolate Bruce Delanda, the fullback, the winger as well, just maybe because they were smaller men. But I think you saw, I know it's been talked about a lot, that first line out whenever there was a steal and there's an opportunity to pass the ball wide. You know, that's the opportunity players, I suppose, maybe need to have the courage just to go, well, this is an opportunity for an overlap, and, you know, we sort of need to maybe not go with the game plan because this is what we see in front of us. And potentially that is something, you know, I know definitely that's what Mike would encourage, and maybe that's potentially going away from the previous regime, as it were, which for players, you know, if you've been growing up with that for the vast majority of your professional career, you know, it does take a little bit of time to get away from it. So I know that stat is not exactly fantastic, you know, 1 in 54, whatever it was in the offloads, and I definitely know that's not the way Mike would sort of want to play it. But you know, at the same time, I think, you know, having Andy Dunn just said there, having the courage, I think, you know, being prepared to be able to push the boundaries a little bit more and make sure that you get this attacking game going forward.
Yeah, Mike, like Andy Farrell and Mike Catt in their press conferences over the last week, like they have been quick to stress that the players do have license to play what they see in front of them. They're not bogged down by a set game plan. But to touch on something that Ian probably referenced there, is this as much maybe a hangover of the last regime under Joe Schmidt, when there was so much scripted and there was so much kind of orchestrated by the coaching team specifically?
Yeah, and Johnny Sexton talking in the week said, you know, one of the main focuses has been since the changeover has been this expansive game and playing, you know, against an unstructured attack and playing freely. And yeah, it's just frustrating for us because we haven't seen it. And I suppose that honeymoon period's kind of over. We're expecting the Six Nations to start with a bang and incredible performance. And, you know, we lose first game against the Wales. And we all know in the Six Nations, you win your first game, creates that momentum going forward. We saw it in 2018 where Johnny kicked that drop goal against France in the pouring rain, you know, in the 80th minute. And you know, perhaps we were quite lucky to win that game. But then we went on to win the Grand Slam, beating England at Twickenham. So, yeah, we lost our first game under unfortunate circumstances, losing, you know, playing with 14 men. I actually thought Ireland played really well in that game and, you know, they could have won it away from home against Wales. And, you know, perhaps if we'd won that game, we'd go into the French game with a bit more confidence. And, you know, it seemed we were lacking a bit of confidence in that game against France. And, yeah, just, you know, the best form of attack sometimes is defence. And we've seen that with France with Sean Edwards, you know, that line speed, getting off the line, forcing mistakes, and then you're, you know, you've got the ball off turnover and you're playing against an unstructured defence. So, you know, I'm sure we'll see progress this week against Italy. You know, as I say, I think it's a, you know, a very strong team on paper. And I think, you know, I think it's coming. We didn't see it against France. But you know, I certainly think there's going to be a big improvement going into this game now.
Mike, is it a case, though, even if we do see a big improvement this weekend against Italy, that the question marks will still be there? Because I think we've kind of seen it over the last few years that any time Ireland have had big wins against Italy in the competition, they've kind of instantly been dismissed as, oh, well, Italy haven't won in the competition since 2015. Like, it's almost expected at this stage.
Yeah, well, here, listen, I've been waiting for you to bring it up, so I'm just gonna. I know you've got it. I'm sure you've got it in your notes there. I actually played that game on 13 where we lost.
I wasn't actually going to bring it up. But look, yeah, fair play to you for your honesty.
Yeah. So look, go anytime. Like, I know, results aside, going to Italy, you know, they bring a huge amount of physicality, and you know, I'm sure Ian will touch on this in a minute. But you know, they've given young players that chance, that opportunity. They're 9 and 10, look really good. That, you know, they're 10 is Garbisi. He made his debut in October a year ago, and look where he is now. You know, the results haven't come, but their attack is looking, you know, very good, especially against England. It looked very dangerous. So, you know, going over to Italy, it's going to be tough. It's going to be physical, but it's a bit of a banana skin because, you know, you want Ireland to go over and win by 20, 30, 40 points. And that's what the kind of, in Ireland, we're all expecting. But if that's not the case and that doesn't happen, it's a close game, there's certainly going to be questions asked.
Yeah, Ian, on Italy, like the scorelines, they've had heavy defeats in their opening two games. But I don't know how you feel. My own personal opinion would be that the scorelines probably haven't really been too reflective of the games, because in the first half against France, they actually showed some good attacking stuff and, you know, they let in some poor tries. And I think against England, they were very unfortunate with some refereeing decisions around tries. And I think even though England were the better team, on another day, it could have been a much closer scoreline. Like, Italy probably aren't as far away from the pack as the scorelines have been suggesting over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing, you know, living there for nearly 10 years, the biggest thing and the word that was always used was consistency. You know, so that was consistency in everything you do, whether it was an attack or defense or on and off the field. It's just getting into a routine, getting into good habits and everything. So, I mean, definitely watching them, I've been really encouraged by the first couple of games. Obviously, shipping 50 and 40 points is not acceptable. Don't get me wrong, that's not good enough. But when you've got a halfback combination that is 19 and 20, who are playing well, who are pulling the strings, that can only be beneficial for Italian rugby when you've got other guys. You know, I think there was five or six guys who were under the age of 22. You know, and that is, you know, we're talking about Ireland integrating players. Italy are almost going into the France mold of just basically anyone 30 or over is not going to get a look into this team, and we're building to the future. So I know it's frustrating. It's frustrating for me to have played in it, to watch. But definitely there have been some improvements in these last few games, and the scoreline should have been closer, but that's international rugby. If you make a mistake, you're going to be in trouble. If you combine that with two mistakes, you're basically going to find yourself on your own try line, which is one of the most difficult places to get out of on a rugby field. So it's just having that understanding of key moments, when to do the right thing, when not to do something. But I think, you know, this experience with all these young guys coming through will reap the rewards definitely in the future.
To focus on the halfbacks who you referenced there, Paolo Garbisi and Stephen Varney, what sort of games do they play? How exciting are these two?
Yeah, well, Varney in stature, he's playing in Gloucester, and he's a very, you know, he's by stature, he's very, very small, but, you know, he's got serious speed into his game, his accuracy of passing. I think even if you saw the Tommaso Allen's try off the midfield scrum, just his speed to get, you know, past the back row or even just to engage them, you know, for any defence in the world, if you can have a nine who can look to attack around those fringes is very difficult to stop. So he's, that part of his game is good. Paolo, he's played more international games than club games. So he's, you know, got an educated left foot, big long boot. But I think the thing that comes out, and I've said this before, is just his maturity. He's sort of almost an un-Italian player. You know, a lot of them, you know, definitely do like the champagne style, almost French, old school French style of rugby with offloads and, you know, maybe looking to do the ridiculous thing. Whereas he just seems to do the correct thing under pressure, which, you know, is fantastic. And that just breeds, you know, competition. And that would make someone like Tommaso Allen, who's fortunately injured for this weekend, but, you know, he's got 60 plus caps at the age of 27, but that'll pick up his game, you know. And the more quality players you get like that, like you have in the Irish team, you talk about the back row and all the quality that's there, that just makes a team stronger.
Mike, you had your hand up there.
Yeah, I was in Zoom etiquette, so I was going to ask a question. I was actually going to ask Ian about that Monty Ioni. He looks a handful and dangerous. Where's he come out of?
Yeah, originally Monty's Australian and actually played over in Stade Francais. So he's Digby Ioane's nephew. So I would have played with him in Treviso for a few years, and I think he came over as a trial basis, and, you know, was put into a starting team. I think we played against the Dragons away, and just straight away he was scoring tries. So his try ratio per game is outstanding, whether it's in, you know, it's in the Pro 14 or European rugby. He started off, you know, with a good try against England. So he's just a finisher. I mean, you give him a tiny bit of space and he'll be gone. So that's, again, that's positive. You know, you have someone of that X factor and quality coming in, can only make it better.
Ian, in terms of the style of the way Italy play, for those who mightn't have seen them too much over the opening rounds of games, what sort of style will Italy be trying to beat Ireland with? The stats would probably suggest they're not kicking too much. They like to keep hold of the ball, keep it alive, run through their own phases and force turnovers then when they don't have it in counter-attack. What sort of way are they playing?
Yeah, well, I think for this weekend, definitely it'll be a pressure game. You've got Ireland, who are under some serious pressure. You've got their coaching staff know that they need to get this victory. So I think, you know, the closer the scoreline can be, you know, ticking towards that 80-minute mark, you know, a lot more nervous than Ireland will become. So it'll definitely be, you know, making sure the basics are done well. But, you know, Franco Smith, the Italian coach, his philosophy is, you know, basically, very rarely will you play the ball in your own half. It's kick it using Paolo Garbisi's long left foot just to kick it as far as you can, get a chase line and make sure that your defensive line is set. And when you do get into the opposition, you just try to put speed onto the ball. So that Monte Ioane's try against England, you know, I think you saw that. You saw good interchange, you saw offloading, you saw speed of the ball, and, you know, execution of a 4v2, almost a 4v3, which, you know, is not an easy thing to execute. So definitely, I think they won't look to change a lot. It's just basically making sure that they get the basics right, their discipline. And Mike said at the start, like, a lot is built on defense. France, England based their games on defense. Italy, if you have a good attack, it's wonderful scoring, you know, maybe 25, 30 points or whatever. If you keep shipping 40 and 50, you know, it's almost like the old Real Madrid mantra. You know, they said, even if you're going to score 4 or 5, we'll score 6. But it's difficult to do that at international level. In rugby, especially maybe when Italy don't have the firepower like that, but they'll definitely look just to shore up a few things in defence, because the attack, as you said, it seems to be going okay.
Mike, to just go back to Ireland for, I suppose, the two uncapped players on the bench. We kind of touched on Craig Casey a few minutes earlier, but Ryan Baird, you would have watched him last week at the Dragons game for Leinster. How was he? Because he's a player who, had it not been for COVID, there's a fair chance he probably would have been making his debut in this fixture 12 months ago.
Yeah, he just comes off that conveyor belt of talent. You know, when I retired, I thought I was getting out at the right time with James Ryan coming on the scene. And it's just a continuous, that conveyor belt of beasts and athletes coming through from the school system. So, yeah, look, he wasn't really around too much when I was there 3 years ago, but yeah, you know, I've seen him. I commentated on the game against Dragons last week, and yeah, he just typifies what a lot of those guys coming through have. He's a specimen. He's big. He's powerful. You know, great hands, and you know, I think a lot of those kind of front five players that are coming through in the provinces now, they're not only big and powerful and strong, but you know, they can all handle the ball, and that's probably something that's moved on since I finished up. Is how well all those front five players can kind of identify space and pass the ball. We saw Tadhg Furlong, how well he does it, and it was great seeing him back. He doesn't just bring that strength and power. He's also got those soft little touches in the midfield to give a pass out the back under pressure to connect with the back. So, and his work rate is phenomenal. The amount of work he gets through, he's just fantastic, and he's got an incredibly bright future going forward. So hopefully we see him get his first cap.
And how important as well is that we see the likes of himself and Casey get some decent minutes rather than, you know, 10 minutes from time being thrown on to see out a game. Like, you want to see these guys playing hopefully 20 plus minutes in an ideal situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for Craig Casey, it's disappointing not to see him get on against France. I'm sure they'll get a chance. But yeah, it's just for the guys going over to Italy, it's that dangerous position to be in where everyone's kind of the outside noise of expectation that they're going to beat Italy by 20, 30, 40 points, which is what France did in the opening game, you know, and then Ireland go over there and they try and chase it. And, you know, I've played in games where you're expected to win by a big score. You go out there, you try and force it, you try and push the offload, and you make mistakes, your discipline drops, and, you know, it can be a banana skin and you get into a tight game. As Ian said, if they stay in touch, they'll kind of grow in confidence. And the longer they stay close to Ireland, the more belief they'll have. And that's kind of what happened to us in 2013. We went over there, although we had, you know, a number of injuries. And on the day, you know, we had yellow cards, we had back rowers playing on the wing and stuff. They were winning the collisions, they were winning the physicality, and they grew in belief. And as that belief grew, that physicality from them grew, and they beat us. But, it's just they've just got to go out there, play their game, try and identify the space and get the ball to that space and finish off their opportunities. And if they do that early from the start, you know, Ireland can really go ahead and chase and build a good score.
And then, Ian, just one last thought on Ireland as well at hooker. Someone we mentioned right at the start of the show was Ronan Keller coming in for Rob Herring. Is this an audition now for Keller to actually nail down a starting spot, or do you get the feeling that Rob Herring is currently holding the starting jersey and Ronan Keller is just getting a chance to get some minutes under his belt? Is there a big opportunity for him here?
I think if he performs like he has been coming off the bench for a good 60-70 minutes, I don't think there's any reason why he can't start the next games. I mean, if you've got that full front row, that's a fairly dynamic front row, whether it's the one starting against Italy or you know, if you do bring in Kian Healy, you know, that's dynamism, and he's at the forefront of that. So I definitely think he can nail down the spot going forward. It's almost like Hugo Keenan as well with the fullback position with Jacob Stockdale gone. You know, if he has a good campaign, continues to play well, put performances in, you can nail down that spot. So definitely, I think if he performs well, he can look at the Irish number two jersey for a few campaigns to come.
All right, we'll get your prediction for Ireland Italy at the end of the show, guys. I do want to touch on Wales against England this Saturday as well, because this one's shaping up really nicely. Wales have named their team inside the last 20 minutes, half an hour, and they've brought back some big guns. George North is in there to make his 100th cap, 100 caps at 28 as well, which is absolutely frightening. But they've also been able to bring back in Jonathan Davies, Josh Adams is back in, Lee Halfpenny has dropped out, so Louis Rees-Amett keeps his place on the wing. They're going with Kieran Hardy, inexperienced at scrum half instead of Gareth Davies, just Hardy's fourth cap, I believe. So in full, it's Wyn Jones, Ken Owens and Thomas Francis in the front row, Adam Beard and Alan Wyn Jones in the second row. Josh Navidi comes in at blindside flanker with Justin Tipperick and Toby Faletau completing the back row. And then Kieran Hardy and Dan Bigger in the halfbacks. Josh Adams and Louis Rees-Amett on the wings. Jonathan Davies and George North in the centre. And Liam Williams at full back. And England also named their team earlier on today. I'll run through it here. Starting with the back line, Elliot Daly at full back. You have Anthony Watson and Johnny May on the wings. Henry Slade and Owen Farrell in the centres with George Ford at out half and Ben Youngs at scrum half. And then in the pack, Maka Vunipola, Jamie George and Kyle Sinclair in the front row. Mauro Itoje and Johnny Hill in the second row with Mark Wilson, Tom Curry and Billy Vunipola completing the starting 15. George Martin also comes onto the bench, the Leicester Tigers second row. He's going to potentially making his debut after an injury to Courtney Laws the other day in training. But guys, this is shaping up really nicely because Wales, they haven't looked particularly good over the opening couple of matches, but they've two wins out of two. And Mike, if ever there's a team in the Six Nations who just roll on momentum, it's Wales.
Yeah, it's funny how quickly things can change. And Wayne Pivac was under a huge amount of pressure leading into the Six Nations. And, you know, we find Wales 2-2, and who would have thought leading into the competition. But, you know, ultimately, they've had a bit of luck on their side, playing against 14 men for long periods of the game against Ireland and Scotland. But, you know, that's not their fault. They've shown a huge amount of heart and desire and belief. And we spoke about momentum before. They've now got 2-2. They've got that momentum and they're picking from a pretty full strength team, full deck. And I hadn't seen the team. I knew they had all three centres, Johnny Williams, Jonathan Davies and Jordan North back fit. So, you know, it looks a very strong team. They're playing at home and they'll be going into the game with a lot of belief. At number nine, you mentioned number nine. I don't think they can decide who their number nine is. So someone else gets an opportunity. And Rees-Amett he's been phenomenal. We saw last, you know, the tries a few weeks ago. He's an unbelievable finisher. He's been talked up for the Lions now. And, you know, not just only his finishing, you know, he put some incredible kicks in as well to relieve pressure from his own 22, some absolute belters. So, yeah, it's looking like it's going to be a cracking matchup, that one.
Yeah, Ian, it's shaping up brilliantly, particularly the fact that Wales, they've had to ride their luck and they got that momentum, but they've reached the point now where there aren't any excuses because they're pretty much at full strength now with the players they brought back in.
Yeah, I don't think they can continue riding their luck, I suppose, as they have done the first two games, but, you know, I mean, fair play to them for pulling out the results. I mean, the Scotland game, I mean, if Scotland didn't get that red card, who knows how would have finished up. But England are under pressure as well. I mean, they haven't performed well, you know, even though they had, you know, a comfortable enough in the end victory against Italy, the most unlike English performance at home to Scotland. So usually Wales, you know, find an extra 10%, possibly even more whenever they play against England. And, you know, who would have thought if Wales can pull off another victory here, you know, they're 3-3 after being under so much pressure. So, you know, you're looking at the English team and not much changes, only the couple of changes and sticking with the George Ford and Owen Farrell combination, which, you know, I do think is the best thing going forward for England. And I think it's just a case of them finding their mojo again. I mean, the Sarri's players who have been out have underperformed, even, you know, Itoje, who's just a world-class player, just hasn't seemed to be 100% at the races yet. So two games in, you know, have they got rid of those cobwebs? Will they be ready for the game? I'm sure they will be, and it'll be a fierce encounter.
It's for England there, you know, they're against Scotland, you know, they're talking about, you know, players being undercooked, not having had much game time, but their discipline was absolutely shocking. You know, I think Itoje gave about six penalties away in the first half, and I'm not sure how their penalty count finished up, but it must have been near about 20. And you know, you know, at test level, you aim for 10 or less, probably most teams do. So like, it's very difficult to win a test match when you're giving away that number of penalties. So I actually thought against Scotland, I wondered if Scotland had made the most of, you know, the England's poor discipline, because England was still in touching distance at the end, as poor as they were. So you know, I expect to see a big, you know, much improved performance from England going over to Wales.
It's funny looking at the media coverage of England over there, because it seems that Eddie Jones has actually kind of been faced with a lot of the similar questions that are being put to Andy Farrell and his coaching team here. Like the attacking setup seems to be under a lot of scrutiny at the moment, with the amount that they're kicking and the poor return they've got off it against both Italy and Scotland as well. And also the selection, that it seems to be a very, very settled bunch of players that is incredibly hard to break into. People wondering how the likes of like Marcus Evans or Joe Simmons can't even get a sniff at a squad place at out half, or Sam Simmons as well at number eight. Like Billy Vunipola has been speaking about, he's been nowhere near the level that he should be at. It seems to be very much a closed shop with England, and Eddie Jones is putting himself under a bit of pressure in.
Yeah, I mean, and even, I think, did I read that Ian Botham even came out with a statement saying that the English group doesn't look happy? So, I mean, look, we know what the English media is like. You get a couple of bad performances and you're in trouble. But, I mean, the argument for including some of those players, I mean, like, you look at the England team and, like, really, would you change some of those players? Yes, granted, the form is not fantastic, but on paper, those are players that essentially got England to a World Cup final. You know, how can you change some of those guys? And yeah, they haven't hit the ground running 100%, but I'm convinced as this competition goes on, they'll only get stronger. But listen, Eddie Jones knows how to play the media. He'll soak up all the energy, and in some way he'll be able to transform that and use that as positive energy for his players going into the game. So I think, yeah, England will have a, if I'm to try and predict, you know, will have a much stronger performance than they have done in the last couple of games, certainly now that the team is sort of, you know, they've had a couple of games under their belt.
I'm going to save predictions until right at the very end. We have had some breaking news actually in the last couple of minutes. Unfortunately, we're not going to be previewing three games on this afternoon's show, because the game between France and Scotland, which had been scheduled for this Sunday, is now officially postponed. Six Nations confirmed it this afternoon. They have not confirmed, however, when the rescheduled game will be played. They say they're working towards doing it. As you can see on the screen here, if you are watching this, the Six Nations Testing Oversight Group met today to review the situation in the French camp. They unanimously recommend the postponement of the France-Scotland match. This will be ratified later today by the Six Nations Council. We'll be working on the rescheduling of this fixture and we'll communicate the date in due course. Mike, as I think a lot of people were suggesting earlier in the week when we were wondering, was this game going to be postponed? On the face of it, there's a break weekend next week. That looks like the ideal spot. But unfortunately, you have the situation where there are probably around 10 or so Scotland players who are due to be back at their clubs next week and do not officially have to be released by the club. So it's a very, very tricky situation as to when this game can now be played.
Yeah, sure is. It's a bit messy, isn't it? But look, I'm glad it's going to be rescheduled, because I was, you know, when I first heard it, I was thinking, does that mean, you know, Scotland will get the points, and you know, I wasn't sure how it would work exactly. So at least it's going to be rescheduled. But yeah, I think they had 15 cases, you know, before, and there was talk of it being postponed. Their captain had it, one of the Galtier had it as well, and then I think there's been one more case, hasn't there, or possibly
this morning,
more.
Obviously. Yeah, one more this morning.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a shame to see, but obviously health and safety is more important, and just hopefully it gets you know, the sense with the way it's worked out for the Scottish players not having to be released. Hopefully sense prevails and we get it played with the two strongest teams possible.
Guys, almost time to wrap up. I'm going to throw a couple of quick fire questions from the audience at you as well, and then we'll get predictions as well. I'm just going to look through some of these here. Short answers as well. I'm going to put you right
on
the
spot. Do we have to buzz? Do we have to buzz for this? Or
you can say buzz if you want to come in on it.
Oh, okay.
This one on James Lowe defensively. So C Power says, I remember Stockdale was heavily criticised for some defensive errors when he was on a scoring spree. By comparison, Lowe's mistakes have been a lot worse with nothing to mitigate. Is James Lowe deserving of his place, Mike?
Well, I was going to say, I was going to buzz and say, can Ian answer this one? Because he's expertise on backs. But yeah, I think he's totally deserving of his place. I think he's world class, and you know, people spoke about him not finishing off that try, but I think most wingers wouldn't have even got as close as he actually got. Let's remember, he's just back from injury, hasn't played too much rugby. So I think the longer he goes on with him getting more game time under his belt, so it's meant to be a quick fire, isn't it? But yeah, he's a beast going forward. He draws in a load of defenders, and you know, I think we're going to see that in Italy, and drawing in two or three defenders, creating space for the rest of the team. Bit of work to do on his defense, but he's a work in progress.
Ian, I'm going to put this one to you. Kira Hudson says, Ireland look like a team with no innovation, work hard and roll the sleeves up, but lack real quality in attack. I'd love to see Luke McGrath back in the squad. Where does Luke McGrath sit in the pecking order, do you think?
Yeah, I think you can put Luke, John Cooney almost in the same bracket. You know, they both seem to chalk out, you know, good performances. And I suppose Luke has been starting ahead of Gibson Park. So, again, that's just a coach's feel. You know, if they feel Gibson Park can offer something a bit different, more of an attacking game around the fringes. I mean, if you do notice in the Irish attack, they would look to bring James Lowe a lot off the line out, even just as a decoy runner, or use him up as first phase. And just because he's such a big man and gets go forward balls. So I just think Ireland, you know, is probably further out in the field. If you actually go and look at the games, you know, they are creating overlaps. It's just maybe not necessarily taking them or been accurate enough in what they're doing. But definitely, I think, you know, I think Luke McGrath and Cooney, like Reese Ruddock, like Gavin Coombs, all these other players, you know, they can feel hard done by, but that would be the coach's idea.
Yeah, and I think with Conor Murray out, the likelihood is probably one of Luke McGrath or John Cooney are probably going to be travelling with Ireland this weekend as an emergency backup. And just one final one here from Colin O'Brien. Leinster plus Guess is effectively this team. So I think it's 10 or 11 Leinster players in the starting lineup and all Leinster backline. Are your former province taking over?
Yeah, I don't like these quick fire questions. You get put on the spot a bit, don't you? But
that's the point.
Well, it looks like it. Yeah, I don't know how to answer this one. Ian, can you help me out here? That's the fact of the matter. It is, yeah, it's predominantly Leinster. And I suppose that's the way over the past number of seasons with the performances and the trophies they've won, that does give them that slight edge in selection.
Yeah, I think just maybe coaches definitely don't go in thinking, we're going to pick a whole Leinster backline or Munster, Connacht pack or Ulster, whatever. But maybe, you know, with the injury of Murray, their hand has been played. And you know, in terms of, say, Gibson Park and Sexton. And to be honest, if you play at club level together, it definitely does help in the international stage. At least you have some sort of history together, and that can help you in the games, definitely.
All right, guys, before we finish up then, it's prediction time. We're going to go through the two games. We'll start with you, Mike. Ireland against Italy. Who's going to win by how many?
I think the spread's 22, but I'm going to go Ireland to win. Do I have to give the actual score or just what I think?
Give us the actual score for...
Okay, winner.
Just on the off chance Ireland, you get it 100% right.
Ireland 42, Italy 13.
And Ian?
Dry ball... Rome, it never really rains, which is never bad. I would say Ireland 35, Italy 19, something like that.
And then the other game this weekend, Wales against England on Saturday evening in Cardiff. Who's going to win that one and by how many? I don't need an exact score on this one, but...
Yeah, I to be honest, I'm almost tempted just weather, to go...
Can you see my weather app for Rome?
Bring it just to the left, yeah, and up a bit. There we have it.
Bright sunshine, guys.
Lovely stuff.
It never disappoints. no, I think going for the England Wales game, everything is momentum, and I'm probably going to go Wales by a few points. They usually have a good record against England in Cardiff, so I'm going to go with them.
And Mike?
I'm gonna go England 22, Wales 17.
England 22, Wales 17. Two close ones there anyway. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million for joining us this afternoon.
Cheers, guys. Cheers. Thank you.
As Mike McCarthy and Ian McKinley there. And that is almost all we have time for this afternoon on the Six Nations show. I will just run through a few more texts and comments because we got loads in. We do only have time to bring a few to our guests. Cora Sheehan says, can anything be learned from this team? Maybe a little bit. Jordan Larmour getting a good run on the wing. Ronan Keller, first start. Dave Kilcoyne, his ninth start for Ireland out of 41 caps. And hopefully, as we said, we can get some significant minutes into Craig Casey and Ryan Baird. That would be the main thing we'd be able to learn out of this game, hopefully. Malps says, Forza Italia. Obviously, a friend of Ian McKinley's there. Harvey Gallagher, what sort of impact do you think Baird and Casey will have off the bench? That was one we touched on as well. Kevin Donoghue, my concerns is in low tackling in defence, which is something we also hinted on. And Cathal Sheehan, Italy are better binning their older guys. Their underage teams have competed well with the Six Nations sides, so it's better getting these guys in, what that confidence, and get rid of the old mindset. Yeah, I think it's fair to say Italy are, they're attempting to play the long game here. They are running the risk as well, though, of bringing on a lot of scrutiny of whether or not they justify their place in the Six Nations, which is a conversation that probably comes up every single year. I think, you know, it would be a disaster to lose Italy because you want the game to be going global and you want more and more teams to be getting better and better. I think the best case scenario there is to expand the Six Nations rather than to relegate Italy. But look, it's good to see them playing the long game. It's something they've tried before, hasn't quite worked out, but hopefully they can get there over the next few years. And then one other text here from Stephen Murphy says, Ireland have some great youngsters that need trying out, but there's financial implications to losing these games. So you can see why the coaches are under pressure to stick with the tried and tested. Yeah, I think that's the general consensus we've had as well so far. So just to run you through the games that are coming up this weekend as well in the Six Nations, we have Ireland against Italy at 2:15 this Saturday afternoon in Rome, followed by Wales against England at the Principality Stadium in Cardiff. 4:45 kickoff there. And thankfully, our producer, Di Boland, has updated the France and Scotland game with a big off logo because we had that graphic saved in as well. Yeah, France and Scotland, unfortunately, has been postponed due to further COVID outbreak in the Scotland camp. And we'll just run through the table heading into this weekend as well. As we can see, France leading the way, but they are going to be replaced at the top of the table by either Wales or England, who play on Saturday. The winner of that game will be leapfrogging France. And then, as you can see, Ireland looking to pick up their first win. At the very least, they would move up into fourth place ahead of Scotland, and who knows, maybe even ahead of England if Wales can do a job on England this Saturday afternoon as well. But that is all we have time for on our Six Nations show this Saturday, or this Thursday afternoon. Thanks a million for watching and listening. If you only caught some of this, you can podcast it back on the OTB Podcast Network a little bit later on the OTB Sports app, or check out any of our social platforms to watch the video back in full. A reminder as well, all of our rugby here on Off The Ball is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. And keep an eye out as well for lots more on OTB Sports this week. Bronagh Driscoll will be on Off The Ball this evening on the radio show. Niamh Briggs will be looking ahead to the game tomorrow evening. And then on Saturday, James Downey will be joining Off The Ball with live analysis as the game is going on. We will be back in a couple of weeks' time ahead of Ireland against Scotland. So we'll speak to you then. Bye for now.
The Six Nations Show on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.